Welcome to what is a special and unscheduled episode of the Agents Angle, given events in the last week regarding the FFAR, FIFA Football Agent Regulations, with me, Jonathan Booker.
And me, Peter Paleologus. Last week we saw a judgment handed down in an appeal by FIFA against one of the injunctions in Germany which halted the FFAR. Now, this case was a ruling on the 13th of March 2024 by the High Regional Court of Dusseldorf, which upheld a temporary injunction against FIFA's football agent regulations in Germany, in particular in relation to the player agent fees. The court decision in this matter pretty much looked at Germany, but also EU competition laws, and that there's a tension between them and FIFA's FFAR regulatory remit and ambitions. It's all based on the fair market competition between agents, players, etc. So it was a significant ruling, and it confirmed the temporary injunction issued by the Dortmund Regional Court on the 24th of May 2023 in response to a lawsuit that was filed by three agents. And this injunction stays in place. FIFA and the DFB, which is the German Football Association, appealed this decision to this higher court. However, the court decided that the injunction remains in place until the conclusion of the first instant proceedings. It was a disappointment for FIFA, I would say, and DFB in terms of their jurisdiction, but the court found that the caps especially and some of the other provisions in the FFAR are unsuitable or unnecessary for FIFA to achieve stated goals based on the FFAR. The court highlighted the service fee cap, and it looked at this fee cap, amongst other things, that it aimed at reducing the frequency of transfers, but was ineffective since the demand from clubs and players primarily drives transfer numbers, not the incentives for agents. So the cap was not something that provided fair competition here.
Yeah, for me, the case we're referring to in this instance, as there are two cases in Germany, was the first case that really put FIFA on notice over FFAR. And I personally see it as having some influence on other similar cases around the world, whether it be in terms of rulings or acting as a motivator for other challenges to the FFAR. But whilst other cases have got quite a lot of exposure in the media and gained awareness within the football industry, I think this case itself has gone a bit under the radar. But the injunction from the case certainly got a lot of people's attention, not least FIFA. In fact, when news of the original judgment broke back in May 2023, I know exactly where I was. I was sat at CAS, the Court of Arbitration for Sport, as the CAS hearing on FFAR was coming to a close. And when the news started to trickle through, the lawyers and others in the room actually started whispering to one another and looking at mobile phones and tablets and laptops. And I recall it wiped a certain amount of smugness off the faces of FIFA officials in that room. And FIFA's legal counsel lead in that case requested a break in proceedings to confer before the closing statements of the chairman of the arbitration panel was about to commence. But a lot of water has passed under that bridge since that time, with another injunction granted in Germany, the injunction in Spain, plus the rulings in England and Brazil, amongst others, since then.
Yes, Jonathan, there's been a plethora of other injunctions or rulings, plus we've seen some national associations suspend parts of their national football agent regulations, which reflect the FIFA football agent regulations. But I think if we look at this case, and we will discuss it further with our guests, I want to put a quote forward from the lawyer for the plaintiffs or the three agents who took the Dortmund case. And it's a quote from Dr. Philip Wheeler, lawyer for the plaintiffs. He said, and I quote, "Today's court decision fully confirms our legal position that the contested provisions of the FFAR violate European competition law. The court was right to find that the contested provisions of the FFAR were neither appropriate nor necessary to achieve a legitimate aim capable of justifying the anti-competitive effects, nor were they proportionate in that regard. Today's decision of the court is final and will remain in force until the decision is made in the main proceedings pending before the court of first instance in Dortmund." Pretty much this statement encapsulates what happened in Germany and reflects decisions in Spain, in England. Brazil's a bit more complicated because they also focused on language and other things, and we've discussed all this before. But it's a crucial decision, and it's probably one of the most important cases in FFAR.
And with this particular case in Germany and the challenge to FFAR, We had hope many months ago to get one of the key people behind this challenge on the Agents Angle to talk about it, as I think they deserve a lot of thanks, gratitude and praise from the football agent community and others in the football industry. But for understandable reasons, not least an ongoing case with a FIFA appeal likely, they weren't able to come on the show at that time. However, with the appeal of FIFA now rejected in this case, and the ruling at this level effectively finalised, we are very privileged to have a bit of an exclusive. And as I said, our special guest today is, for me, an unsung hero for many agents when it comes to FFAR. His name hasn't been mentioned a great deal, but having monitored FFAR for several years now, I think he and the case he brought with his associates is probably the one that acted as the speed bump that slowed down the FIFA FFAR steamroller.
Both have definitely slowed down the momentum of the FFAR's full implementation, because we do know that licensing still exists in terms of there are going to be upcoming exams as well. Yes, he's one of the three agents or agencies involved in this case, and he's our exclusive guest today. I would now like to welcome Michael Frank to the Agents Angle. Michael is a football agent who recently completed the FIFA Executive Program in Football Agency and also has an Executive MBA in Sports Management from the Real Madrid Graduate School, also called Universidad Europea. Interestingly, Michael also studied big data and AI in sports management. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Michael, before we get into the German legal case that you're involved in questions, I understand you mainly operate as an agent in two countries, namely Brazil and Germany. Tell us about your agent business and how you work between these two significant football markets.
Well, Peter, it's quite simple. The reason why I'm in Brazil is not only because of football, it's because of my private life. I'm married to a Brazilian, so that's the main focus, and I try to combine in working as a football agent and living in Brazil and also being in Germany. So this is the reason, and I'm working more or less in intermediary work and not having an agency at itself with players here, but I'm very well connected with a lot of agents within Brazil, and we are working on the initial steps for Brazilian players to go to the European market.
Now, our listeners may not know that you've worked for a football agent that managed Manuel Neuer, the legendary German keeper. Can you tell us a little bit about dealing with Manuel and other big name players at that agency?
I cannot really say so many things about that because it's in my past. Yeah, I'm not working for this agency anymore. So I can only say that I was the football coach of Manuel Neuer, I think more than 20 years ago. And that was one of the reasons I joined this agency. But gave me the opportunity to work as a football agent. And I'm always grateful for that. But nowadays I'm working self-employed.
And now we want to focus a little bit on the German case. The Dortmund case, because we know there's a Dortmund case, there's other cases. When you took this case forward with, I believe, two other colleagues or two other agencies, did you have any idea how pivotal it would be, not just in Germany, but many would say for agents in football or football agency around the world?
Peter, I have to start a little bit earlier, maybe, because it's not the case that you wake up one day and you decide, hey, I go to court with FIFA. Of course not, yeah? Especially not when you work so many years in football. I did my FIFA license in 2010. That was more or less the time when I started working as a football agent. Before that time, I worked 12 years in a football club in Germany. As I told you, was the coach of the big goalkeeper. And so I was happy to have this license because I was proud to be a licensed agent. And in a way, it was good to have an entrance requirement to work in a profession that is in a way organized. And when FIFA abolished the licensing system in 2015, to be honest, I felt pity that they abolished the license system and was quite happy when in 2019 I read on the internet, yeah, they're going to bring it back again. From that time on, I was more and more interested in this field because from the first moment, I was really happy to have entrance inquiry to the football market because I felt it's not good that everybody can register and work in this field who pays their registration fee. And the more I get information about it, the more I realize, well, it's about the licensing, but it's also about cutting down of the commission fees. And let's put it in a nutshell. That was the reason where it grew in me that it's not only not justified to cut down income of people who do a good job, who not only are all big agencies, but also normal people who work in a field that they really love and to pay their rent, who need the money for their family. And suddenly they are faced with a situation where they are only able to have 3% of the normal commission they would get. That was the more or less initial step where I decided to get more and more information about everything that's about this topic of this new football agents regulations. Yeah, even at that point, it was not 100% clear that I will go to court because this was a situation that was more or less born, I would say, end of 2022. And then started to really grow in the January 2023. And then I really decided to do it because one of my co-claimants, we are two people in this case. Yeah, it's Ralf Bockstedt, who is also my lawyer. We decided to do it together. And then we had the legal background. We had certain information also from, like you mentioned, the other cases in Germany, where we thought, okay, the other two cases in Germany, as you mentioned them, I'll give a little info to that. They are run by a very big agency called Rogon. And Ralf and me, we had more or less the idea to give a little a different picture of agents. That it's not only about the big agencies, the super agents who are always in the media, that it's about totally normal people who have a normal income, who work in the field they love, and they don't want to lose their job. And that was more or less the way the decision was made to go to court.
What did you think your chances were of winning this case? You can say a percentage, you can say your gut feel, or you can even say your legal opinion that you had from your lawyers. When you started this case, what was the feeling of the chances of success of getting an injunction and stopping at least the initial implementation of the VAR in Germany?
Going to court is always a risk because you never know how a judge will decide on your matters. But it was not even the question to think about what are the chances, because there was no real alternative. I felt that we needed to do this, or I felt that I needed to do this because I wanted to continue working in this field. And I don't want to switch my profession because of people who decided somewhere in the world what I can work or not. I wanted to do this by myself. And so it was not even a question to do it or not. It was clear to go this way. And there was not a real percentage to say, okay, maybe 50-50. No, it was not this way because we were 100% sure that we are on the right side here. Because, for example, we are not challenging the licensing system. Need to say this, the football agents regulations, they have parts that are good, really. But there are certain parts that are not possible, literally not possible from an economic point of view. And that was the way we were trying to approach this matter. And for this point, I was pretty sure we have high chances to at least win in 1-2 points. Yeah, that we have a chance that we can get out there successful.
On a personal level, and you may not want to disclose this, in terms of finances, time, resourcing, and any other aspects, how costly was this case to you personally?
I don't want to really go in details there, but was not easy, was a lot of time involved. And as you can imagine, when you're doing something like this, it's a little bit like David against Goliath. There is always a risk and there is always pressure. And it was now more or less more than 1 year. Yeah, nearly 1 year that this pressure was above me, above us. And we are very happy that it has this result now. So that's all I can say.
You mentioned pressure. Was there any pressure applied directly or indirectly by any association, whether agents or a national football association, to get you to maybe withdraw the case or back down or try to negotiate before you went to court?
No, there was nothing like that. No. And very happy for that. I was also not expecting that something like this happened because this is something I really have to say. Through all the process of this trial, it was always very professional from all sides.
Yeah, that's good to hear. That's what I've been hearing. I mean, I know there's been a lot of cases, we've here in Spain, the United Kingdom, England, I should say, Brazil as well, where you're based right at the moment. Also the CAS case, I would say, in the Court of Arbitration Sport case that Profa ran. It's all been done at a very professional level. It's about the litigation. It's about the law. It's about the competition elements. It's not about the persons per se who's taking the action. That's what I've been hearing echoing across the space. And everyone's been respectful in the process, at least in terms of the litigation. There is another case, an injunction in Germany. How does that differ from your case? You mentioned the case run by Rogon in terms of Roger Whitman. How is that different from your case? So that is different in aspects. Do you know much about the other German cases?
Yeah, I'm not 100% in detail in this case. Of course, it was always a source of information, obviously, for our case in Dortmund and Düsseldorf, as FIFA was referring, of course, to the cases in Frankfurt and Mainz, which are run by Rogon. Obviously, we were successful in the injunction and the preliminary injunction in Dortmund. It's a big support for their cases as well. So what I can only say is that, it's only a point where we can only support each other in a way because we are fighting for the same. And as far as I am updated on that is that the Rogon case is going to the European Court of Justice and there'll be decision coming end of the year. So in a way, this case and the decision from the European Court of Justice will also have an effect on my case in Dortmund.
Michael, you started off this challenge to an extent on your own and with the associates who've taken the challenge forward. But over time, you seem to have garnered support from various individuals and groups. And some of those had opposing views at times over FFAR. Where has the support come from over time and how difficult was it to build that support?
Well, it's a good question because you're right. We started it alone. In a way, I can only say that through this year, I got so much support from all parts of the agent world that I could never imagine. When I started, was me and Ralf who started this case. And when I look back from the moment we started it to the situation we or me are now, it's a big difference because nowadays I have contact to the biggest agents in the world. And I also know that when I call them, they pick up their phone. Before that would probably never be the case. Yeah, also the fact that football agents associations are also supporting me, supporting us, is always a good feeling. And it's not only the question that we feel empowered by that, it's also the point that it's also a very, very good base to work on for the future. Let's put it this way. That's for something that I said last week when I was in Rio and met Roger. We should really try to continue working together, not see this as a one-time event. Because we should try to build something out of that. Because before this FIFA case, not only my case in general, this football agent regulations, football agents were more or less seen, okay, they're kind of individuals, there are some groups, there are some super agents, there are some small agents, then there are several representation groups. But in a way, the feeling was they are not united. And now we have the situation that I think football agents showed that when they act united, they can really achieve something. And this is something we should go on. Yeah. So in a way, it's a good thing. But we should funnel it and work together, all of us, and not stop here.
I think you're reiterating what Peter and I say a lot of the time. And a lot of our frustration is that the agents don't work together as much as they should and offer a united front. And there's been a bit of infighting over the last couple of years with FFAR. So I think you've achieved something there in bringing disparate parties together in a way with more of a unified front. And obviously that's ended with some success. But looking back over the time of the case, and it goes back a couple of years now from the planning and preparation and obviously bringing the case forward, reflecting back, have you any regrets from taking the case forward? And are there any things that in hindsight you would have done differently?
It's a good question, but honestly, from the perspective I am now in the situation that I won, it's quite easy to say I would not have done anything different. But I think I said at the beginning of this interview, it was never the question if I should do it. It was clear that we have to do something. At the end that I had this outcome, this result, it's outstanding because really the whole year it was stress, it was work, it was pressure, a lot of pressure, but it was a great experience with great people, with top contacts and would not do anything different, no.
If you had a forward-looking glass, how do you think it's going to pan out for the FIFA football agent regulations and agent regulations in general, either in terms of, and I don't want you to do any guesswork on the European Court of Justice, but in terms of FIFA's next steps and what's going to happen with these regulations and the industry in general? What's your, say, gut feel or your view looking forward?
Difficult to say, because from a normal perspective, I would think that it should be normal that FIFA should try to reach out to the parties that won the case, because they are the parties that are involved. But as far as I understood, is that there is an agent working group. Actually, I'm not really updated about the current situation of this agent working group, which is something which I'm a little bit surprised about, because there is a working group, but as far as it concerns me, I don't get any kind of information. As a licensed football agent, I don't get any information about what happens there. And this is probably something that should be also discussed. And to answer your question, as I don't really have a crystal ball, I don't know really what happened, but I wish that this big organization, FIFA, really sees now that there are so many cases in the whole world. You mentioned Spain, my case in Germany, England, Brazil. There is something. It's not only one person who does it. There is so many need for change in these regulations. And it's not only that agents see it this way. Judges who studied law see it this way. And I think it's needed to have a change. This is clear.
One final question, Michael, and really we thank you for your time. Since the injunctions have had, especially in Germany, 2-3 cases, have you seen anything different in the German agency market, or the way that clubs, agents, players, even foreign agents who engaged in German deals, in German player deals, I should say, anything changed since these injunctions, or is it the same as before? Have you noticed anything different in the German agents market?
No, I just noticed that I think the injunction was a big relief to the market, to the German agencies. That was the point, because everybody could continue working in the way they were used to. So in this way, it was an advantage. But there was nothing that came to my informations that there was a real big change. Of course, the clubs are aware of the existence of the football agents regulations. And of course, they are aware of these injunctions. So this is always a topic in negotiations and discussions with clubs and within agents, of course. But a big change in the way of working, I could not see, no.
Michael, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. It's a different time in Brazil. I'm in Melbourne. Jonathan's in Wolverhampton. So it's great to be able to get together and get this exclusive. We really appreciate your insights and giving us an interview on a very important seminal case that affects agents, not because of Germany and there's a German link, but in essence, it was part of the momentum in dealing with the FFAR. And where do we go from here? Obviously, your case has had a big impact. So thank you so much, Michael.
Jonathan, Peter, I have to say thank you. That was amazing. And sorry to keep you awake. I think you need to go to sleep now. No?
All good. We're used to this. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Really, there's a lot of courage and bravery here, Jonathan, I would say, with Michael Frank and his associates to really undertake this matter and litigate it. There's always cost implications. Litigation is expensive in all countries. So you have to give credit to these three protagonists in taking on what they saw in their eyes, something, a framework, a set of rules, the FFAR, that's in terms of the German perspective, was seen as unfair for the business there. And it's had repercussions across the whole world.
And we recognize the costs just as much as anybody. And we spoke about the costs and the wasted money on this litigation with Rafaela Pimenta back on the last episode. But in regards to this particular ruling on this appeal, there's been a lot of commentary in the last week since this judgment was made on FIFA's appeal, which was the 13th of March, and that's 5 days ago at the time of recording. Some of this commentary has been qualified and quite incisive, whilst others, I think it's safe to say we believe, has been a little bit misleading, if not added to the confusion with guesswork and unqualified observations, if only to get attention.
Yes, there's a lot of commentary. We see a lot of opinion on this case. And that's essentially why I wanted to bring Michael Frank on, to get a clearer picture, what I like to call a coalface picture of what the case was about, or the motivations, obviously the outcome, and how it was sort of basically run. I mean, we can always get lawyers, and us lawyers love to give opinion piece on all these litigation, and everyone likes to write good articles about a case. And I'm sure this case and the appeal and the other German cases, as well as the UK ruling, the Brazilian ruling, the Spanish ruling, they will all get a piece in some of the legal journals. But it was important to get someone like Michael Frank, who was involved in the case, to come on board the podcast to give us their view.
And with that, Peter, if I may, I have several questions which others may well be asking as to where this decision leaves us, not just in regards to Germany, but also elsewhere in the world. And these questions I hope that you can offer a bit of clarity on. Now, the first thing we need some clarity on is, does this particular injunction affect only part of FFAR, whether they be the suspended parts or not, as per FIFA circulars 1873 and 1874? Or does the ruling affect FFAR as a whole in relation to Germany?
There's two sort of aspects to your question. First, this appeal court decision is final, so there's no further appeal possible. Obviously, a European Court of Justice decision down the track may make an impact. The original court, the Dortmund court, will now need to go through the merits. But right now, there is no FFAR application implementation on, I believe there was 9 challenge points in Germany. And I'll go through a few of them. So the service cap doesn't apply. Article 15, as we know, the rules concerning service fee payments. Article 14, that also happened in the UK. And the client's payroll doesn't apply. Timing of service fee payments. The prohibition on double representation does not apply. Interestingly, reporting obligations and rules regarding disclosure and publication do not apply. So there's some of them. Also, FIFA Clearinghouse, which actually hasn't come into the agent sort of space at the moment. It's intended to in a couple of years, doesn't apply. So pretty much it reflects what you said, the circulars. But in Germany, the FFAR as a whole doesn't apply. That doesn't mean that German agents can't still do the exam to get licensed, because we don't know what the future holds. And we know that a lot of people are taking their license again this time round. But pretty much the fundamental aspects of the FFAR, especially the cap, dual representation, are not applying in Germany. I would say it's pretty expansive, Jonathan.
So it still leaves those gaps with certain elements of the FFAR. It's not the FFAR in its entirety, whether it be Germany or whether it be worldwide. There's still a lot of unanswered and lack of clarity with that. And I really think FIFA now need to step forward, make a decision and decide what they're going to do going forward, rather than constant litigation and appeals that keeps everybody, shall I say, hesitant and confused. But one of the key parts of this is it leaves us with the enigma that is the link to Germany, as FIFA put it. As even after several months of this term being first mentioned by FIFA, it's still unclear as to what it means exactly and where it applies. So it's understandably open to a lot of interpretation, such as you've mentioned licensing for German agents. Can the DFB run exams for the FIFA license? Are other associations expected to apply the initial guidance by FIFA on matters with regarding FFAR, where there's identified to be a link to Germany, whether it's of an international dimension or not? That's still unclear, because we now have national football agent regulations, which, as I understand it, if there's a link to Germany and then an international dimension, they're expected not to apply the FFAR in those cases where there's a link to Germany. And also, a big question here, overseas agents operating in Germany, those players coming in, those players going out, as well as international agents operating on domestic matters within Germany. There's so much lack of clarity still there.
There is, and there's also complicated layers where other national associations have suspended their regulations. Belgium and Denmark have obviously made certain changes, and elsewhere. The link to Germany still requires you to operate under German law. We've got to remember that. Now, obviously, people see benefits that the cap doesn't apply, etc., but the cap doesn't apply in Spain and England, their options as well. You have to look at the whole operational framework, which country you want to operate in, because yes, people say there were advantages to operate in Germany, but I would say that then there's also advantages to look at Spain and England and other markets, because you have to consider tax, business structures, other types of insurance and laws that apply to agencies. Remember also, the link to Germany also means no exclusivity in rep agreements, where German agents, even before the FFAR, weren't allowed to be exclusive with players. So sometimes maybe you don't want the link to Germany, because if you want exclusivity with a player, you can't have it in Germany. Right, Jonathan?
Yeah, and then again, the other side of the coin is that you could sign a representation agreement for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So there's a lot of confusion, and that needs to be resolved for everybody, because the only people who are going to be busy out of this are the lawyers, and it's going to be very, very expensive. Now, there is a huge elephant in the room, and that is the ECJ ruling. which seems to be FIFA's last hope with FFAR, from where I stand anyway, in terms of Europe at least. But I suspect we will still have a minimum of 8 months to wait before an ECJ ruling, possibly a lot longer. And how will an eventual ECJ ruling affect this German ruling, as with those in the likes of Spain and Belgium? Because some commentators have suggested German legislation could then sidestep any eventual ECJ ruling, let alone FIFA regulations and FFAR.
I've heard some lawyer chat say it could be as late as 2025 for an hearing. You mentioned a couple of points. This is only European aspects, may not apply, as we know, Brazil, US, Australia, the UK. Now, if the ECJ decision is not definitive and it leaves the FFAR in some sort of uncertainty, or even stronger word, chaos, then football being such a very important business and sports looked at very specifically, especially in Europe, the German regulators or government or legislature, the UK, even the EU and other countries may have to come in to deal with the chaos. In your country, Jonathan, you may have an independent regulator going forward in the next few years. They may actually recommend some sort of changes. They could even decide to approach the legislator and say, look, we need to make an application to the Competitions Commission in order to look at these caps or to look at these fees. They can do a lot of things. They can recommend things. And national law, just like we have in Italy, just like we have in France, may be an option if FFAR doesn't work worldwide. We don't know. We're speculating. But the governments, and as well as the European Union, do have the ability to look at these regulations in the Asian space and make decisions, make legislation, look at fees, look at representation, dual or multiple, and look at all these issues. I heard that the Spanish government was waiting to see what the outcome of the ECJ is and may consider something like Italy or France, which we haven't discussed and we need to discuss in upcoming podcasts about the Italian and French agency systems. But yeah, if there's a willingness to deal with any uncertainty, it will come from a regulator, a national regulator, could be a competition regulator, could be a government, or could be the EU.
And worth noting on that independent regulator in England or in the UK, there are no signs of them even touching agents' matters. I've read all the documents, I've liaised with them for years, and there is absolutely no interest, as it stands, of the independent football regulator showing any interest in agent matters. In fact, they've gone as far to pass it back to FIFA in the documentation that has been released. But does this ruling and the ongoing situation put the German football market, not just agents, at an advantage over other football markets, as is the case, arguably, for Spain with their injunction and the arbitration ruling in England, and of course, the ruling in Brazil?
Look, there are advantages, obviously, with the German football market. I would say Germany and England would be another one, considering the cap and the way you're going to be paid. Spain as well. There are advantages in those three, four markets, whereas in France, it's a very fixed system. Italy, it's got its own system, although it needs further clarification how it's going to work with the FFAR. So yes, Germany provides, at the moment, for fees and operating flexibility, some advantages. But I would say that you need to get an informed opinion of where to operate. We're an international business, and it's not that easy. Yes, all of a sudden, everyone's saying, let's move to Germany. It's not that easy, because you've got your local clientele, you've got structures, you've got people working in that domestic market. You just can't shift everything across. So I think it's a case-by-case basis. Yes, Germany, some advantages, but I would say England, Spain, and elsewhere also got those. So it's really up to you as an agent or as an agency to assess every factor and make that decision.
I think a lot of agents and people in the agency business will be quite honest and say they just want this nightmare over. It's just gone on for far too long. And this is whether they're agents, agents' associations, players, clubs, and even some people at FIFA want this nightmare over. And some people have more sway and more say in that to bring it to an end. It's been a mess. Yes, it's slightly less messy than it was with such rulings as this, as well as the rulings in the likes of England and Brazil and Spain. But there is the possibility we could end up with an even messier situation in the future with regards to what the ECJ ruling may turn out to be. There are ways it could be resolved if only some people demonstrated some common sense, abandon the ego-driven agenda of self-interest, if not self-preservation.
Yeah, look, going forward, I think if it keeps fractured like this, certain decisions will have to be made in order to bring things to a head, bring some unity and certainty to the marketplace, especially if the ECJ is going to be end of 2025, I'm guessing there, of course. We can't leave it like this. We need a little bit more certainty. Yes, there are some circulars. But on the flip side, what I'm hearing is a lot of people lining up to do the exam, Jonathan. And regardless of this uncertainty and this German link and Brazilian scenario and the rule K and how that affects and what each national association, FIFA, are going to do, there is huge interest in getting that FIFA license or holding onto the FIFA license. So going forward, it's going to be a very interesting space, both regulatory, business, but agency itself.
And with that, that brings us nicely to the end of this special episode of The Agent's Angle. As with all our other episodes, whether scheduled or otherwise, please take the time to like, subscribe and leave reviews of the individual episodes as well as the show as a whole, whether on the main podcast channels such as iTunes, Spotify or Amazon, or on the various social media channels. And of course, please do share the show and episodes with colleagues, friends and family who may have an interest in football and particularly the world of agents. So with that, it's bye from me.
Bye from me.
The purpose of the Agent's Angle podcast is to provide news, information and facilitate discussion on regulatory matters, policies, business trends and issues affecting football agents worldwide. The opinions and recommendations presented in this podcast are for general information only and should never be considered legal or professional advice. Furthermore, the views expressed by guests are their own and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Thank you for listening.